minority attorney. It is 6:30, and we are starting.
Is it legally 6:30?
According to the minority attorney. I'm bipartisan
over
here.
Can I get a second opinion?
That's 6:31.
I agree with the chairman.
That hasn't stopped me before. Where's Tracy Bartels when I need her?
Okay, we're going to call this meeting to order, and can I get a motion to approve the minutes for May 14th?
So moved.
I'll second that.
All in favor as written?
Aye.
Moving right along, do we need to skip anything to help anybody out, or?
Not that I'm aware of.
Then we...
I don't know if Chris might be here to speak to the ladies, but I'm not sure.
Why are you writing all over my...
This Chris.
Oh. We need specific designations of Chris's.
I get rid of that.
Chris with a Z.
Okay.
Which one is that?
The last two.
Let me note that Ellis.
Chris, we're going to skip ahead so you can get in and out if you'd like that. We're going to go to 276, amending capital project 334. Kingston Rail Trail, authorizing the chairman of the Ulster County Legislature to execute agreements, certificates, certifications, and reimbursement requests.
So moved, Mr. Chairman.
Second.
Chris, is 278 the same thing, or is that different?
277 is the bonding resolution.
Okay, that's not us. Okay, 276, any questions on that? You want to speak about it, Chris, real fast?
Just briefly, this is a project to connect the Hurley O&W Rail Trail to the city of Kingston at Washington Avenue. It will build a 1.8-mile, 10-foot-wide asphalt-paved trail. We've been under design, and we're getting close to final design approval from the New York State DOT, which is funding this with federal and state dollars. And we are now getting queued up to acquire 3 permanent easements that we need for the project. This is for the grant agreement that we signed with the DOT. It authorizes $60,000 for right-of-way acquisition. That's 80% federal, 20% state, and it may be well more than we need. We know that 2 of the 3 parties who we need easements from have indicated a willingness to donate them. So we will try to get all 3 donated if possible. We hope to put this project out to construction later this year with an opening in late 2019. So again, this is the revenue contract with the New York State DOT. We'll be coming back to you probably in the fall for an authorization to construct.
Okay. Any questions on
I just have a question. Physically, where is that? Is that off of the Hurley Trail?
You know, at the end of the Hurley Trail,
yeah, and it goes
there's a
down.
Farmer underpass.
That's down in there.
Yeah, it works its way along the Central Hudson right-of-way.
Yeah.
They're actually now acquiring right-of-way, and they're going to move a number of their poles out of the way.
Okay.
So that we have a clear width, and then it comes out. It passes a little bit of Adirondack Trailways property.
Yep.
It
yep.
goes under the thruway, and then it follows Ulster Savings Bank
okay.
right away to behind the Super 8 Motel, and it will end at Washington Avenue, where there'll be a small 8 or 10 car parking lot. And that will also meet up with the city's sidewalk system.
Yeah. And you'll come right off of that Hurley Trail, go down?
It's going to be probably a switchback
okay.
right there because
yep.
it's steep.
Yeah.
It won't go under the road.
No.
It will have to bring you up to grade.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Any further questions on that?
So this and this will take an 18-mile trail network and make it almost 20 miles. Mm-hmm. And we're trying to extend it further on the southern end as well.
Mm-hmm. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
And I do have information on 278. I know that DPW couldn't be here if you want.
Let's skip over 278, approving the execution of a contract in excess of $50,000 entered into the county for Harrison and Barrows Bridge Constructors. Chris, please explain that.
I'm moving for a discussion.
And I'll have a second.
Second it.
So this is to do bank stabilization in an area where our roadway is right next to the West Branch Creek in the town of Denning. And this basically, it's not involving a bridge, but there'll be retaining walls. We're going to replace culverts on the road. And then they're also going to work with soil and water to open up the floodplain of the stream. So every time it floods, it doesn't just wave out the road. They'll also be raising the road. And they are, part of this will is going to receive a $500,000 grant from soil and water. So it's partially funded by DEP money through soil and water. Not my project, but I'm doing my best.
That sounds good to me.
I just have a quick question.
Go ahead.
Curious, just the purpose for it being a late resolution, was it just because you needed to get in there quicker than you thought? Was it because of the money accessing funds? I'm just curious why it didn't go through
public. My understanding is there was miscommunication between the contract management division and the Department of Public Works.
Okay.
You have other resolutions that were submitted, and then this was inadvertently left off the contract abstract. There is a time sensitivity, though, because there's a narrow window in which you can work in the stream. They're only allowed to work in the stream until September 30th due to drought restrictions.
Gotcha. Thank you.
Sorry, I'm a little late.
Thank you. Right now we're voting on 278 days. That's a late for some construction work that has to be done. Right now. Can I get it? Oh, sorry, I'm sorry.
Okay. So, Chris, I realize you're pitching in on this, but just was DPW, at least the DPW committee, informed of this, and that, you know, there was at least a communication between you guys and the chair, the deputy chair, and the committee itself?
I believe so.
Yeah, this was mentioned, I think, at the public works that there might be something that had slipped that would come in late.
All right, but was this specifically shared with DPW?
It was shared with me, but I'm not sure if that's because I asked to be on laws and rules or because I'm on.
This is.
Can we just make sure? No. And I know, and I'm not trying to. Can we ensure that we get this to the DPW committee level? Thank you. I just don't want like this whole process in which we're not letting the host committee or the original committee at least know that the DCs are coming to laws and rules. First of all, good enough. Thank you.
Thank you. All in favor of 278?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? I have in front of me 277. It's authorizing, and you guys don't have a copy yet, but I'll pass this around if you want to look at it. Or, Jay, do you want to make other copies? It's up to you guys. Jay says, I'd rather not make other copies. I'll pass it around, save paper. It's basically the $60,000 bond that goes with 276.
This is the walkway thing, right?
No, it's the Kingston Rail Trail, the link trail to the ONW.
Right.
On the Ulster Savings Bank Central Hudson right away.
It's the bond for this one. It just wasn't on your agenda. That's my fault.
Yes, it was a late for the company's 270.
It call it 8D.
I mean, it don't want to do
it. It's very signed to me.
He knows where I'm looking. It's not a bypass.
I'm going to let everybody look at it real fast before we talk about moving it.
Off the executive and shut down. That's one of them. You know what?
We haven't voted on it yet. No. We just wanted to pass it around.
Thank you.
This is just the bond for the resolution that was just passed, right?
So 276. This is 277.
Right.
60,000.
Okay.
Jim, when you're done,
I'm a little confused what this is again now. Chris, what is this?
This is
let Hector and Brian
the Kingston Rail Trail project, which connects the Hurley Rail Trail to Washington Avenue in the city of Kingston.
Oh, okay. Right. Now
so you may remember the state portion of this money actually came through Assemblyman Cahill. This is a project that goes back to 2010.
Right.
For some reason, they didn't get the design going, I think because they never got to a price with the firm they had selected. They didn't have enough money, and it took right. them a number of years to get enough money on the transportation improvement program to get it going.
Yeah, okay,
we restarted it in 2014. We're trying to get it constructed at the end of this year.
Thank you, Chris. Can I get somebody to move 277 in second, please?
So moved.
Second.
Any discussion on 277? Again, it's the bond, $60,000 bond to get this 276 going. All in favor of 277?
Aye.
Aye.
Thank you. Thank you.
Checking off approved?
Yes, please. We're going to go back to the beginning. That's 154. Setting a public hearing on proposed local law number 12 of 18, establishing an Ulster County Contractor Licensing Board and providing qualifications, examinations, and regulations of home improvement contractors. Again, I have to excuse myself on this one. Dave, if you want to take over.
All righty. Well, as my iPad finds it, I'll use the paper. All right, it's setting a public hearing on the Contractor Licensing Board, providing for the qualifications, examination, and licensing regulation of home improvement contractors. Open for discussion.
Laura, are you prepared to move this forward?
I haven't gotten any support to move it forward as it is. I would like to open up some discussion to see what the concerns are. I've had some input about a subcommittee pulling it and putting together a subcommittee so we can get some sort of consumer protection law in place. And I really don't want to back down off of a consumer protection law. I mean, I realize that there are a lot of good contractors out there, but there are also some that, it's not a level playing field. They don't have the workers' comp, they don't have the insurance, and if something goes awry quickly, then tuck tail, change your name, and go. So, and honestly, I haven't gotten too much input on this law, other than there's concerns and there's not enough to carry it forward. Thank you.
Anybody? Go ahead.
So would you be willing to postpone it to set up a subcommittee?
I would be, yes.
That would be at the pleasure of the deputy chair.
Is anybody I'm looking at? Mr. Maloney, do you have any input on this?
I'd like to hear what are the negatives that you're hearing? I'll pass the question.
Okay. Nobody knows. Negatives are the impact on smaller businesses. Is it too much? Not just going in front of a board, but the expense. There's been a recommendation to put together a registration. I have spoken to the DA's office. I guess years ago they absorbed the consumer fraud department because there is a consumer fraud in Albany. However, I have called that office myself to file complaints, and they refer you back to your local consumer fraud department. So the concern there would be if it was just a registration, they don't have the personnel to follow up on any complaints. They don't have the personnel, even if there's not a board to go through, to collect any type of fees. So part of it is administering it. Other part is impact on businesses that are small or where it's a business where English isn't their first language. That's what I've gotten so far on it. I mean, it is when
all right, before we continue on, we haven't actually moved this yet. We're having a discussion without it being moved, but
It is a public hearing.
I mean, I'd move it for the purpose of discussion.
Yeah. Move it for discussion.
Now we can continue the discussion. Sorry. All right, I don't know. In other words, I'm leery of that one only because I know there's a lot of people that do work on the side, and I understand that, you know, protections, we should have some types of protections, but I know there's certain insurance protections, and, you know, I'm not comfortable with this one as of yet. I think maybe if we, you know, some people wanted to work on this, I mean, if anybody has a volunteer to work on, you know, pushing this thing or, you know, putting something together in a way that may be more acceptable by more people to get it to pass. Hector?
Thank you. I'm not a member of the committee, but obviously I'll help out in whatever way that I can. And I know... I know that he's refraining from discussing this. I know Chairman of the Committee Roberts has been involved in this in previous itinerations. This legislation goes all the way back to 2009, I think, as I recollect, maybe even 2008. So, you know, we've worked on this on and off over the years. I remember at one point, I could have sworn at one point there was a dollar threshold, meaning it was like on projects that were above a certain dollar amount.
Yeah.
So maybe that's something for the committee, this subcommittee, to kind of consider to create a differentiation between the guy who's doing the small sort of jobs and then the person who's really doing the much larger renovations, and that's the individual maybe who, over that dollar amount, is now sort of the one having to get a license because they're doing jobs above, say, and this is just... is not scientific, but whatever, $1,000, $5,000, something like that, where now the homeowner is now putting up substantial dollars, and that's what we're sort of maybe looking at protecting, as opposed to, you know, guys who are doing jobs painting houses for $500 or something like that.
And I mean,
you know,
even with the insurance, they can cancel the insurance at any point.
So,
provided and cancel.
So the committee maybe actually has some options looking back at some of the different versions of this that existed over the years.
Yeah, I favor the idea of a threshold in order to put people under this because I think for very small projects it's not worth the hassle.
Mm-hmm.
But I also would want that committee to look into the possibility of maybe some kind of countywide bonding mechanism for small contractors.
Brought that up. Yeah.
And that, you know, because if somebody's bonded, then that can mm-hmm. protect the homeowner. But for some of the small contractors, doing the bonding is a burden. So maybe we should talk with our Small Business Association or Economic Development, so some group that could maybe help to bring these groups together. If that were in place, then something like this would be easier to pass without hurting the contractors.
Well, I don't know. In other words, at this point, I don't know about anyone else that's on the committee that is, wants to deal with this or, you know, work on it on the side. Or, I mean, at this point, I don't think we have the vote of the committee. I mean, you can pull it or we can vote on it. I mean, it's up to you, or we can postpone it. But I would suggest, my suggestion is... because I know this committee is going to be having a number of things that we're going to be working on. My suggestion is that there doesn't seem to be a outcry from the committee to get jumping on this.
Yeah.
So what I might suggest is I know that Legislator Partels looked at some of the things and had some concerns with it, and a couple others. I mean, we could either postpone it or you could pull that and get a hold of these people and, you know, sit down and work with some other people to come forth. Because I know there's not support by a number of from both sides for different reasons. I mean, it's your pleasure. What would you like?
We kind of want to dig in there, but if it's not going to get passed, I don't mind rewriting it. So,
I know it's, you say you're disappointed, understand that, but this is an enormous task. I mean, there's so many moving parts to this and so many levels of contracting. I think that is one of the problems.
Okay.
you know, is it needed? Sure, you know, yes, no, sure.
Yeah.
But, you know, this is huge.
Yeah. So we have to do something.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with Legislative Maloney.
Go
I think.
Go ahead, say it.
You know, yeah.
Don't say it, John.
But,
don't say it, John.
I don't, you know, haven't experienced, you know, in my, you know, community, like people really having an issue with fraudulent contractors. But, and, you know, I represent a district with many, many contractors. And it's the issue, one, is what Jim said, is that it is so broad. I mean, you're, by the current definitions, I mean, it's, very, very broad brush, and I'm not sure, and I don't think, you know, that concern, you know, undermines the fact that, you know, always we should be looking at better ways to protect consumers, but I'm not sure this is exactly the right way in such a broad attempt with the contracting community, because it goes, you know, from so many different levels, from a kid home from college painting houses for some of the job under these definitions to a person building a multi-million dollar estate under the same kind of, you know, strong restrictions. So I think, you know, that's, you know, I share those concerns.
All right. Well, it's been withdrawn, and I hand it back over to you.
Thank you, Deputy Chair. Appreciate your kindness. We're going to move right along.
Tough job, but somebody had to do it.
Welcome, Chairman Ronk.
Thanks. The Uber got me here faster than it was supposed to. I lost a Serpentine belt in Ravina, so I had to leave my car at Napa.
Well,
really?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's a good day.
How much would you really take that phone call?
$65. Thank God we had it, because otherwise I'd be stuck.
Isn't yours linked to a card?
Yeah.
Okay.
I believe I said 211. We're actually on 155.
good movement there.
Somebody crossed it out here on my page. I don't know
Was it an accident?
Oh.
My first day with the iPad.
Stylus.
So we're going to see your old name. We're going to have 155, setting a public hearing on proposed local law establishing an Ulster County Electrical Licensing Board.
I'll move it.
Second.
Hector, you want to...
Just making sure everybody did get copies from last week of laying out the different fee structures and the stuff that came up in committee from last month to be able to kind of compare green to Sullivan, us, orange, so that way everybody sort of, I think, has a baseline of understanding of what we're talking about here. Mm-hmm. You all got copies of that?
Yeah.
Okay. Just want to make sure.
Mm. I'll forward it to them.
I don't think I got a copy, Hector, but I don't know if it's relevant in my life or not. But honestly,
you're the chair of this committee. It's kind of relevant to you. Victoria sent it off to the I think
it
the committee
did.
The legislature.
I have it right here in front of me.
Oh, there you go. So I don't know. I guess I can open up for discussion or for questions or for suggestions.
Do we have any questions or discussion on this right here?
There's something additionally that we wanted to know.
And this only sets a public hearing on. I just want to remind everybody, is there more support for this than there is for the general contracting licensing?
Yes, I believe there is.
As written?
I almost think.
What?
Go ahead, Hector. What is the changes recently that you've been made on this?
Well, there haven't been any changes made, but it was about making sure that the committee was aware, and if there were changes to be made, that we could make them in committee and then get this thing to a public hearing. So... that's why I want to make sure you guys all have this information in advance.
I don't think I was here last month, but I invited the electrical union representative. Did they show up?
No.
He sent a letter. Yeah.
And the letter said...
he was cool.
He was cool, huh?
Yeah.
The letter said what?
He was cool with it.
Supported the contract.
Honest to God, I think that's exactly the way Sam would put it, but...
Yeah, I'm cool with it. Yeah, maybe, maybe, yeah, you probably would.
I'm cool with sending it to a PH. Kenny.
I'll vote to send it to a public hearing with the understanding that, you know, I have a concern about this one, I think, even more than the general contractor licensing law, because I feel like this is a duplication, because any work that's done by a contractor already has to be inspected by a member of the Board of Fire Underwriters. So, you know, most of the shoddy work and that causes things like house fires and damage and you know, injuries are done by Joe homeowner and not necessarily by, you know, somebody who's already, you know,
Hector, I understand, has inspections going on. You.
Sure. No, I mean, and you know, while I understand that, you know, I'm gonna be very, I think, excited for us to actually have folks who can prove that they are in fact knowledgeable in the field and join our sister counties in Greene, in Sullivan, and in Orange in doing this particular licensing, and to ensure that we also are in harmony with them, so that way we are creating a regional sort of block where we are in fact making sure that we're protecting consumers. So.
Yeah, and I think yeah, if they were hiring a contractor and they subcontracted that, yeah. But a lot of times you may just hire to have just electric done. You know, may not go through a contractor. You may just go right directly to the electrician.
Yeah, but even then it's got to go through the underwriter.
In order to get a CO on any work done by a professional, you need to have an inspection done by an electrical inspector.
Yeah. I'm going to go with
they won't be,
Kathy and then Jim.
A licensed person is not going to do that unless they know there's going to be an inspection.
Mm-hmm. If there's a permit process, you need an inspection. Yeah, but Kathy, correct. Go ahead.
I appreciate this layout of all the surrounding counties and the cities. Do we know that the law as drafted would qualify for a reciprocal arrangement, especially with the counties or the cities, wherever the most work is done?
Based off of, I had Victoria look into this, and the answer was yes, but in addition, I believe we're going to have to, I think you'd have to pass like a resolution or something like that to actually do the actual reciprocity, but that's not a big deal. Mm-hmm. Right now, currently, Greene, and actually, I always encourage everybody to take a look at the Greene County website, because I think there's this really... We need an electrician.
I don't think this was inspected properly.
part of the reason why I wanted to like lay out all the feet, if somebody wants to go and change that, I'm very open to changes in this to make it, you know, even more in harmony with our neighbors. So don't view as if any something like where that dollar amount's there. If mm-hmm. there's somehow a push to go and change the dollar amount, that's fine. I think I said that last month and the month before that. I said I was open on those fronts. So if there's a desire to do that, I'd probably prefer to do it now rather than waiting until we then get on the floor and then do a public hearing, then have to come back here, then change it, and then have to go through that process. So.
Ms. Nolan, do you have another question for Hector?
Follow up on that. Okay. Yes, you know, some of the counties, in Greene in particular, the fees seem quite a bit less than the ones that are proposed. And for people who live in areas where you connect with those counties, it can cause some acrimony when they learn that they're paying five times more for the fee, for the license. So I would favor Ulster County bringing itself closer to the counties that are charging a lower fee.
If someone wants to suggest
the
number,
I'm on the committee, so I'm not able to make a recommendation on that, but that's my general sentiment.
Point is well taken, Kenny.
I guess one of my other questions is... Oh, sorry, Jim.
No. That's all right.
Jim, you were sitting there like you gave up your spot.
Go ahead. Fight.
You know, I could be open to supporting something like this if you would be willing to, you know, consider eliminating the fee for contractors that already have the license in a county that has a comparable law. Because that's my biggest concern for people that are doing business in Ulster County is if they're doing business, you know, you can't just do business in Ulster County as an electrical contractor. you have to do business in Ulster County, Greene County, Dutchess County, Sullivan County, Rockland County, where the fee is probably enormous, right, Kev?
Well, I can tell you, none of the other counties give you a break just because you got a license in Westchester or Rockland. But
I mean, it
I
just
understand where you're coming from.
It seems to me like It seems to me like a money grab less than a consumer protection. And if we're really about consumer protection, then why are we saddling the business with another fee if they already have the qualifications in another county?
Right, because the in the instance in which they're, I'm assuming that was a question for me, but in the instance now they've got to go and pull a license at some point, I imagine that's probably why they actually, that's why, as you just noted, Kev, you know, yeah, even though you're in Westchester and they wave you in over in Rockland, you still got to go and pay the fee. I don't mind dropping the fee. So that's why I said before, if this is the will of the committee to go and say, we want to match our fee to Greene County, you know, okay, fine. You know, it's like, that's not...
Well, what is the fee on this one right now?
It's a graduated set of fees.
Yeah, so...
Like, but we're higher than Rockland.
No, it's $500 for a county resident, $750 for a New York State resident. Non-New York State resident is $1,500. And then the renewals are New York State resident 150, non-New York State 350.
In Greene County.
So that's the same as Orange County.
Did she have a copy of that?
Rockland is 800 for a New York State resident, 500 for a non-New York State resident. These are both lower than what we just had.
Yours mirrors Orange County, Hector.
What's that?
Your dollar figures are exactly the same as Orange County.
Which is fine, because that was the draft that was used, you know, predominantly. So, meaning, if we want to go and basically drop it into, what's Sullivan? 30, 200, 150, right? And so...
Okay. And that's about the range where Green is. Green is a little higher than that, but as you go up for the more specialized.
Yeah, so, I mean... And then you look at Kingston, which is examination fee, the master electrician fee, then the renewals. It's, I guess, a bit more there. But, I'm more than, Mr. Chair, if you've got a suggestion, or Mr. Chair of the Legislature, if you've got a suggestion on that, on what that number should be, then please.
I don't want to pull a number out of my hat, and I don't think anybody here should either.
Well, we have regional comparisons here.
But I had a question for the attorneys. If we make a change on the fees after the public hearing, does it have to go back to a public hearing?
Is it then viewed as being a substantial change?
How much?
It's going to go down. It ain't going to go up. I don't think anybody's complaining about that.
Presented is the worst case scenario.
Let's say it was halved.
I'm inclined to say no.
I agree. So we got time to think about any changes and you know,
if it was going up, it would be a different answer.
Mr. Hepner?
I just have a quick question. For Hector, just so I can, because I have some electricians in my district that are already master Kingston electricians, so they've gone through the process. So can you just, so I can be better educated in educating them, will there be any type of grandfather clause? So what happens to a resident of Ulster County that lives outside of Kingston but is a certified master electrician for the city of Kingston?
As I recollect, you're still, because you've got your license with Kingston, so long as we're setting a reciprocal license agreement, which is the intent here, you've got your license in Kingston, you're getting waived in into Ulster County. So
With a fee,
and that's where I'm just trying to say, like, I don't mind dropping the fee, but that, you know...
So if we're doing the fee within the county, so then annually these people will be paying the fee to the city of Kingston and the county of Ulster?
And most likely to Green, and most likely to Sullivan.
But I'm saying it's a little bit different because you're
right. Kingston is part of the county.
I don't remember if something's going on over there. Is it annual? And Chris, you could probably better assist me with this. Is it annualized? Meaning, like, even when you get waived in, I thought it was a one-time. Why did I think it was a one-time fee for when you get waived in for that particular time?
I believe it is a one-time.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman.
Somebody call me?
If legislator Hefner's through.
I'm done. Thank you.
Thank you.
Any more questions? I'm going to take a vote.
Hector. Hector. Just logistically, I'm looking, with Greene County and then looking at proposed Ulster County. How is this all going to work? And I don't mean to simplify it. I mean, we're going to have an office. You're going to need support staff. You're going to have a setup board meeting.
There's a board
that's going to have to meet regularly. And here's my question. If you go back to Greene County, master electrician for a single job or installation at one location. Dave calls me up. I'm out of town. I got to put some outlets in Dave's house. Mm-hmm. Okay? He wants it done Saturday. It's Wednesday afternoon. Can I get that permit and get going?
No, you need 24-hour notice.
Yes. Right. How is it all going to work?
Well, I'm not going to clean the head at all.
Dave's waiting for next Saturday.
Well, I mean, here's the thing. I mean, if you're already licensed, then this is a hell of a lot.
No, I'm the Class B master.
What page are you on?
Greene County.
Oh, you're on Greene County. Okay, I'm sorry.
For a single job.
I thought you were talking about the law itself.
Yeah, but I'm a master in, not in Ulster County.
Master in what?
No, my concern is just how it all is gonna.
How to get waived in? You mean
no?
How does it work?
How's it gonna work? Is it gonna slow down the whole process of There's a lot going on. If you go up and down the street, there's plumbing trucks, electrical trucks all over. I don't mean guys. Tell me where do the city electricians and plumbers get their licenses from? Is there an office? What?
Fire department
issues. Okay, yeah, I didn't know that. Yeah. Okay, but I mean, you know what I'm saying. I mean,
well, my suggestion really would be, since the city of Kingston has this thing set up, the county do something with the city. So the city, in other words, would whatever the fee is, and they already got it set up. So make more sense than probably deal with that instead of having two different entities.
I mean, to be able to utilize their board.
Yeah, you might even be, you can work some kind of deal with them to utilize the board or come up with a new board. Or
I mean, the only problem is that Saugerties might take some umbrage at that, simply because Saugerties is the other community within the county that also does this, but I hear what you're saying. I mean,
does the Saugerties have paid firefighters?
Yeah, I mean, I do too. I lean that way too, but he's bringing up a...
But Saugerties doesn't have paid firefighters, so they don't have somebody on staff in that manner that covers those types of things. But the city does. You know, they have paid firefighters. They have paid firefighter staff. They're the ones that do building code enforcement, is the fire department.
For now. That's changing, actually.
So it might be a good thing to, make it happen that way, just to make things work a little easier.
That's a pretty substantial change.
I don't know.
I was going to say but I also hear what he's saying, and that then you're not reinventing the wheel. I want to at least take a second to think about that, to go and say, yes, I agree with you. Generally speaking, it should be an independent board, but there is something to be said.
It can still be an independent board, but you can have the licensing go through the group, because you've got the paid firefighters already doing it. It'd probably be a lot cheaper for them to continue doing it.
Want to make a motion to postpone to explore this idea?
Well, that's after after we pass it. You're going to have the board. You're going to have to come up with it. And I think we have there's nothing in here saying that you can't do that. You just got to have some place to get the licenses. So it might make it easier. Maybe the mayor may shoot me for bringing this up.
I'm sure anything we do has to go in front of the common council on that. Am I correct?
Probably.
We're gonna,
I mean, you are now opening a completely different can of worms.
Yeah, but that's a whole different can of worms. I'm just saying, it might make it a little easier.
We'll have our own board.
You definitely have your own board. You have to have your own board, but I think...
The law provides for a director who's doing... enforcement and that piece of it. So now all of a sudden you'd have to go and point that it's the Kingston Fire Department or something like that doing it. So you'd end up in a different, in a vastly different scenario.
But yeah, they would just issue you the license.
Yeah. Go ahead, Kenny.
Just the answer to the previous question, the grandfather clause is an additional fee.
Yeah.
a yearly fee.
I'm going back to it right now.
Section 16D.
Mm-hmm. Which is any person possessing a certified copy of a master's.
Well, I get a vote to send this.
Valid and effective date.
Public hearing and.
Are they still doing the exam?
Also, C, which is any person's issued under the grandfather clause, may renew said license annually on or before the expiration of the license. And if you don't, I'm sorry, if you don't apply for the grandfather license within 5 years, you have to go as if you've never had a license.
All right, Dave just called for a, for a vote. Send this to a public hearing.
Are they
again, Maloney?
I just like to state, I really believe that the fee should be as low as possible.
Yeah.
Because
I agree 100%.
Because who eventually is going to pay him?
The homeowner.
Correct.
I think they're exorbitant. I mean, they're a little high for us. We could lower them. But
more expensive to do business in Ulster County.
It's a business that has to be done, so you've kind of you got no choice but to pay it if you're...
I know.
Alrighty.
Are we still requiring them to pass an examination?
Hector.
Not if you've already been licensed in... I mean, the hypothetical is that we're going to be going to get reciprocal agreements with Kingston, Saugerties, Green, Sullivan. So if you've already been licensed in there, no. But if you're in Ulster County and you are applying for the license, then you would be going through the testing.
And what I would suggest also is my suggestion is as we send this to the floor, you may want to have a letter sent to the various Green and City of Kingston and all that, advising that we are in the process of doing this and if this may be passed, and if it is, we would like to expedite the reciprocal agreements.
But if I may, just play this out. So let's say this passes. You need to get all the municipalities on board and recommend to the building departments that they tell the people in the building permit process that they need to hire a licensed electrician.
Yeah.
Because the underwriters, hey, if you're a guy out there that's been out there for 20 years, you come and hook up somebody's pool, the underwriter's going to come.
And so long as it's done according to code. They're going to give you the permit. They're going
to
approve
right, so you have to
they
have it.
Will, but once they understand that there's a law in place, they will no longer do that. They'll say, do you, who's the licensed electrician?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there'll be a learning curve at some point. Well, they'll probably accept certain things for who knows how long, maybe a year before they start kicking into the point where they're going to say, hey, wait a minute, you have to have a licensed electrician.
So...
All in favor, send it to a public
And I don't think that's a bad thing. Let me know if you've got somebody that's been doing it and they know that person's been doing it.
So that's a yes on you, Dave?
Yes.
Okay. I'll meet up.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah. Other than me, no. I can't reconcile that we're making business more expensive in Ulster. I can't.
This is for a public hearing?
Yeah, it's only the public
hearing. As it currently exists?
Yeah. That's why I asked the question about whether the committee wanted to make amendments to it or if there was something specific.
I'll be a yes to public hearing.
Okay. What? 211 finally. Adopting proposed local law number 11.
So I'll move it.
Of 2018 for conversion therapy. Jonathan, your baby.
So you guys were there for the public hearing. We had the really incredible testimony from the gentleman from Long Island who himself was subjected to conversion therapy, same age as I am. It's gone back through the health committee unanimously. And so it's back in front of you the same way as you guys thought it the last time around.
Thank you very much. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
You're welcome.
The poor guy that drove from Long Island who was in the 30 cats.
He learned a lot about feral cats.
He learned a lot about cats.
We're going to 212, setting a public hearing on proposed local law number 16 regarding campaign finance.
You know what would solve the problem of feral cats? Feral dogs.
Oh,
thought about that the other day. Colonies of feral dogs.
I'm right in the middle of reading that.
Sorry, go on.
Regarding campaign finance reform in Ulster County. Yes. I need a first and a second. I can't talk about this. I ain't going to give anybody latitude like Dave does. Come on, first, second?
I'll move it. Second.
All right, good. Kathy, go ahead.
Thank you very much.
Would you say you moved it?
Okay. So the comprehensive campaign finance reform is the way that you need to do campaign finance reform. If you want to clean up elections, you can't really easily pick and choose pieces of it that you want to do. That runs into a lot of constitutional issues. So this law includes provisions for lowering limits on contributions from individuals and businesses below what are allowed in New York State. And it provides a mechanism for transparency and reporting, a campaign finance commission to collect information, and public financing, which courts have generally said you have to provide at least some form of public financing if you're going to greatly restrict the campaign donations that people and businesses can make. So this does include that. It's included in a way that would make it a relatively minor part of any budget, with a $50,000 annual minimum. And not everyone who runs for office would qualify for this. Public financing, the criteria would be that you be in a contested race and you have to have a certain number of people who make smallish donations between $10 and $100, and some additional features that would then qualify you to receive money. So this law is set up so that it would be pass constitutional muster and reduce our donations, our contributions in Ulster County from what is allowed in New York State, and provide a registry so we would know who was donating what.
Mr. Donaldson.
My problem with this is that we already had one we were actually working on, and there was plans for the committee to actually start working on that again. And this is actually put back a number of things that the previous committee actually changed. It is more or less the original one that we began working on and changed. So, you know, my take on it is we're having dual things here, and I would rather have one. And I would suggest, my suggestion, I would like to have the subcommittee of this, of the laws and rules put together to work on this. So it comes together more as a bipartisan thing.
I'll go with the big chairman, and then, yeah.
I'll withhold my comments until the discussion on the possibility of a subcommittee and working together is done, because there's no reason in wasting a lot of time.
Kathy?
Well, this document comes from the document that was picked up that the subcommittee had been working on, and some of the members of that committee asked me to pick it up and work further on it.
What members were they?
Well, Jonathan Heppner and Hector Rodriguez.
They? All right. I didn't know they asked you.
No. Yeah. Yes.
Say asked.
Well,
you said I wanted to carry it, and we said, you know.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, Hector asked for somebody.
It was previously Legislator Lawrence Bill, who is since no longer in the legislature.
This is true. I did volunteer.
You went behind our back and asked Kathy to take it over? Is that what you're trying to say?
Right. So what Legislator Donaldson is suggesting, I think, would set us back the 6 months that I've worked on this. It has been primarily with the Democratic caucus that I've worked, because they had concerns that this wasn't tight enough. I have reached out to members of the Republican caucus asking if there would be comments or suggestions, and I think it's at a point where either people can vote for this or they can't. So I'm not sure that there's much more work in committee that I can imagine that would change this substantially.
Dave, let me ask you a question. This bill and the previous bill that you want to go back to subcommittee, is there any major differences on, or
I don't know about major. I couldn't tell you right off the hand. I know this is the one that was the draft that was sent by the executive. We were working on one that changed some of that, a great deal during when it came to some money and, certain where they could take money when it comes to matching funds. And so if there is, there's also a concern that, I believe that public financing is eventually the way we need to go, but I also think there needs to be certain checks that we need to make sure that are put in line. And the other thing is there's we may have to split the bill, or in other words, to create something without public financing if we don't have the support for the one with public financing. But my concern, again, is you have two of them there, and we were already working on one, and I'd like to continue with the one that we were working on. That's why I'd like to figure that out, and then we may incorporate some of this. But, the only reason we stopped was because an election period came up, and we got bogged down in some other things. And then, so my take on it is I would rather see a subcommittee of this so we can actually sit down and pick it apart and come up with something.
Jim? Dave, did the original version have public financing in it? Okay, that's where I can't support anything where taxpayer dollars went to.
Right.
Mr. Chairman, I created a sheet that describes the changes from the prior draft to this draft. They're really relatively small. They're three main ones. The draft that was given to me had requested tighter limits on the individual contributions and on the business contributions. It had requested a three-member instead of a five-member campaign finance committee, and we've come up with a way to accommodate that, created a five-member committee that would have nominations come from good government groups. And the match had asked to be raised from 1-to-1 to 3-to-1. So my sense of that was that those were all things that went in the direction of a much tighter bill that would please some people but would make it even harder for others to come on board. And those meetings have done significant work, so I'd like to start forward from there.
I mean, I'm with Jim. I mean, my constituents, down in Shangum, where I come from, I very rarely hear constituents talking to me about county issues. Most of the issues I get are local issues. They don't deliver the Freeman to Walk Hill. So, if you want to get the Freeman, you have to get it, through the mail. I call and the mail goes to Albany and back down. I call it yesterday's news tomorrow. But, I remember when the county executive first proposed this law with public financing, I was walking my dog down the street. The next day, I had somebody yelling at me from down the street, "Hey, Ken, I hear that Hein wants you to get your campaign paid for by us, huh?" And then used a couple of expletives. So I have a serious problem with the public financing. I've always believed that taxpayer dollars shouldn't go to fund political campaigns. But that having been said, I have a number of other issues with the law, even if the public financing were removed, the least of which isn't that we're reducing the amount of money that you can donate to a member of the county legislature by 50%, but we're reducing the number of dollars that you can donate to the executive clerk, DA, sheriff, or comptroller by 10%. Is there, do you know the reasoning behind that vast discrepancy?
The limits are already set at New York State, and the amount that you're dropping from in the countywide races is over $1,000. It is proportionately not as much, but it's over $1,000. So there was a push to reduce that even further. But you start to run into that this is an area where we don't have a huge number of people to make contributions, and the amount that goes into a countywide race is considerably higher than a district-wide race. So these numbers were chosen to be allow someone who is trying to run to be competitive against someone who can self-fund a campaign. If somebody can reach into their own pocket, then none of these limits apply. And so if there's a wealthy, self-funded campaign, the person who is functioning under this law would still be able to be competitive. And that's a little different at the county level than it is at the district level, just historically. So it's based off historic practices.
Okay. Well, back to where I was before. Basically, the other committee's review was incomplete. We were not finished with the review of what we were doing, so we can't totally make the comparison because we're in that process. Anyway, that's my take on it is I would like to have, a subcommittee put together that we can start looking at this. And granted, we may not, even if we can come up with something with the public financing, we may not get the vote. We may be able to make the argument if the public financing is tight enough.
Want to entertain that as a motion to postpone?
That's up to you. Yeah, I'll entertain that. Yeah, motion to postpone.
Second.
How about before we make the motion, if we if I can get a subcommittee together?
You can set one up as chairman, sir.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I need volunteer.
You can anoint.
I'll volunteer. I was on the last one, so. And Jonathan.
Do I have a third?
Are you willing to do it?
Yeah, I'm willing to.
You guys do what you got to do.
I'll volunteer then, too.
Okay. All right, so we have three.
Would I be allowed to volunteer as
not,
a person also?
No, you couldn't, only because the...
Very
close
to the chair.
Yeah, well, I was going to explain it to you.
I would believe you could go and attend those meetings.
You can attend,
and
yes.
Put in input as any other committee.
Yeah, you can. The only way you can become a member is if he created a committee and we voted on it.
What, did you hear me just going to the bus there?
No, I mean, that's the reality. You can't create a subcommittee with people from outside the committee. Because he doesn't have the power to appoint people from outside the committee.
I just still learn something new every day here. I just don't really understand what's beneficial, though, about having a subcommittee about a piece of legislation and not involving the sponsor of the legislation.
Having
them be able to participate.
They can participate. I've never seen a subcommittee here.
Just can't serve on the subcommittee.
A voting member.
Okay.
I would just like to participate.
Okay.
Without a doubt, you would be able to participate without a doubt.
Okay, so we have a motion to postpone this. All in favor of postponement?
Aye.
Do you want me to chair the subcommittee?
Yes, you can, if you'd like. And I'm going to appoint Legislator Donaldson as chair of that sub.
I serve on all committees as a special member.
We are going to 213, setting a public hearing on proposed local law establishing an Ulster County human rights law.
Mr. Runk?
I'll move it.
Second it.
Kenny, you want to talk about this?
It was a really, I think Legislator Heppner will agree, I hope he'll agree, it was a really great collaborative process. We had input from Maude Bruce from the Ellenville chapter of the NAACP. We had Angelina Vale Burroughs, transgender woman from, representing the LGBTQ community. Jeff Rindler, who's also the executive director of the LGBTQ Community Center, and Dave Clegg, both from the Human Rights Commission, myself, Jonathan Heppner, Mary Warrow, and Rabbi Hecht. And I think we put together a kind of law that really fits Ulster County, that really goes in line with our Human Rights Commission's charge as a 12D commission. We're trying to conciliate and mediate disputes before it rises to the level of going through adjudication. It provides, and I hate using this term, so bear with me, a small claims court for human rights violations. You know, my estimation would be that the more heinous of the human rights violations would go before the State Division on Human Rights, where they have better finding of fact, where they have a lawyer provided to the people making the complaints, where they have investigators and probable cause determinations. But we do have the ability to adjudicate them on the local level in this law with an administrative hearing officer. I think it's a really good product. I think that the damages are a little high, but that's a discussion we can have as a body.
Hector.
I was just going to, you know, concur with pretty much all that the chairman said. It was a really good process, an interesting process that went on, you know, quite extensively. I think there was definitely instances of giving and taking and sacrifices, but also, you know, willingness to listen. But also the biggest thing was really how the final structure ended up with, you know, what I think is the best parts about this is the, you know, the fact that they can go to mediation first. And the local option too, not having to go to Albany. You know, these were they didn't come from the us as legislators. This came from the actual advocate community.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, that was the original
yeah.
thing, right?
And you know that they were the biggest thing was they wanted the option of mediation. That was like one of the biggest things they pushed for, which I think this does a good job of executing.
Hector and Dave.
So to follow up on that though is, you know, number one, I want to commend the chairman. I want to commend Legislator Hefner. When we put this committee together in the wake of the human rights law, I was cautiously optimistic, but, you know, this, I will also say I'm still going to grab my rosary, even though I haven't been Catholic in quite some time, but, you know, it's the thing where, as a hybrid, it makes it a little bit more dicey, and I said this at the committee meeting back in, was it November, December, you know, but I do believe, though, all the participants should be commended for, I think, what will ultimately be a compromise bill, but also that not just that we're also hearing these cases locally, but we're also then using definitions that will be stronger than just what, if we were left to our own devices, that of just going off of what the state had. So I think that's another, I think, a big win, I think, for the people of Ulster County.
Dave?
Yeah, now this is basically one of my main concerns was the idea of trying to get some of these things, these smaller things adjudicated right here, dealt with on in home, because that was, like I saw that from the one side where somebody was accused and, you know, it shows up in the paper and then all of a sudden goes to Albany and then 4 months later, they come up and say there was no merit to it, but meanwhile, that was on the back page somewhere. So, you know, the guy ended up being referred to as a racist by somebody, and when in fact, you know, and I knew the circumstances, and I knew that he did not do what the circumstances was claiming, and then they proved that it wasn't, but the problem was that could have been finished right here in Ulster County, not having to go there. So I applaud you know, the bipartisan effort, and you move forward. It's been a long time coming.
Mm-hmm. You know, this is a law I can support, too, but, you know, I did hear you, Mr. Chairman. I think the damages up to $25,000 is very steep. It could almost bankrupt somebody for maybe a slip of the tongue or an honest mistake or even a deliberate mistake. You know, I'd like to make an amendment on the damages section at 6. $25,000. I'd like to reduce that to $2,500.
Do I hear $10,000?
I think $10,000 is high. I could go $5,000 on it.
Bipartisan effort falls apart.
That was many hours.
Yeah, but in order to get that $25,000 fine, what do you have to do?
I don't know.
It has to be awarded by an administrative hearing officer, and it would be my sincere hope that an administrative hearing officer would, my hope that we would trust that the administrative hearing officer that the county hires would not fine somebody, $25,000 for a slip of the tongue.
You don't know that.
But I believe that's a from a repeated Right.
Then it should say that first offense, 2,500, third offense, 25,000.
The concern that the commission had, because we talked about a graduated damages schedule, and the concern that the commission had on that was that you could be fined $2,500 on the first offense for doing something absolutely heinous, and somebody could be fined for a small slip of the tongue for $25,000 on the third offense. You know, the not to exceed allows the administrative hearing officer the opportunity to take into account the level of severity of the crime. The same way, you know, when we do other laws, you know, a fine not to exceed and jail time not to exceed. The reason for that is to give the judge some discretion.
But this would happen after you ended up having, some mediation. It's not going to happen to me.
This would happen after a failed mediation.
Right. It would happen after a failed mediation. So it's going to be, by the time it gets to this point.
I think here's my thing, if I could, Mr. Chairman. I do feel strongly that if someone's going to be assessed a $25,000 in damages, there should be some legal finding of fact. There should be a probable cause determination, and there should be more lawyers involved than just an administrative hearing officer. You go to small claims court.
So wouldn't they be able to appeal to the state?
No. You'd be able to appeal through the Article 78 process through the Supreme Court, but that's it.
Where does it say that in this?
You can appeal anything under Article 78 in the Supreme Court.
Right, into the state Supreme Court.
Nick, you want to address that? Appeal of the damages awarded by the administrative hearing officer?
Yeah, no, the law provides for that, and it would obviously be at the option of the parties. They can take an appeal or not take an appeal. You always accept the result. Or if you want to invest in an appeal, that option's there.
I would like to see that in as law.
It is. Any person against whom monetary damages or other non-monetary relief are assessed under this section may obtain judicial review of such assessment in accord with Article 78 of the Civil Practice Law Rules.
There are also, if I recall, a set of criteria that the administrative hearing officer is supposed to base his award on.
Yep.
And so in Article 78, I would assume that if the hearing officer did not articulate basis for his award specifically, I looked at criteria X, Y, and Z, and therefore found this amount was justified. It could be disturbed by reviewing Supreme Court judge, not necessarily, but could be.
That's Section 8, which reads: should liability be found after a hearing and determination the amount of monetary damages be assessed, the hearing officer shall consider the seriousness of the violations, any history of such violations, the economic impact, benefit, or harm resulting from the violations to the complainant, the economic impact of the damages to be assessed to the respondent, and such other factors as justice may require. I mean, we could let it go to a public hearing this way and then have discussions amongst ourselves on what level of damages to set it to,
it's substantial enough. And in other words,
I think it's too high.
Like it won't require why is that high?
Go ahead.
I'm sorry. All
right. So, this is actually where, and I'm going to defer to the chairman of the legislature, because this was a part of our dialogue and part of our discussion. I mean, this was with the sort of discussion amongst those folks who are also in the legal profession, that anything above that amount, that $25,000 was sort of like viewed as like that might then be something that a private lawyer may go and take on as a case, and that kind of that under that $25,000 is where they probably wouldn't be bothered with it. I think that was sort of where they were working with various folks.
I think that was an assertion by Dave Clegg that was not necessarily echoed by the other attorneys.
And I understand that, but that was sort of that level of $25,000 was sort of was at least, I think, brought up as to how they got to that number.
I think that Dave Clegg had said that anything above $25,000, you'd probably end up going to federal court. That's what he said. But right. I could be wrong. I'd have to look back.
But I'm just saying there actually was a methodology to get to that number. That's all I was trying to say. Okay.
I think that having a number here big enough to let people know that this is really serious is really important. Yeah. And the mechanism that is provided here for the hearing officer is really the type of mechanism that you would have in a judicial proceeding. It is a judicial proceeding. And so limiting the judge much below that, I think, is taking away the ability to really respond to a flagrant violation of this law. So I do think that you can have abuses, but you could of somebody being charged with too much. But reducing it much below this, then I think you stop having the deterrent effect that is a major portion of what the law is intended to accomplish.
Kenny.
Thanks. Just in response to that, Kathy, one of the concerns that I have is actually that having the damages for the local option too high actually has the potential to have somebody be compensated less than they should be, because the compensation that they would receive from a satisfactory determination by the State Division on Human Rights, I mean, the damages are relatively unlimited. Whereas they have attorneys, and they will have a further finding of fact and probable cause than we'll have in this local option, but they might be more inclined to take the local option because it's easier than going to the State Division. So I think that it would be incumbent upon our Human Rights Commission to counsel these people on how best to proceed. And I think that having this at $25,000 provides too much of an enticement for somebody who's severely aggrieved to go for the local option because it's easier, but might end up getting a lot less compensation.
Shouldn't that be their choice?
Are we giving them an easy opportunity to make that to make a poor choice? That's one of my things. I mean, I think that if something is so egregious that an administrative hearing officer is going to assess a $25,000 fine, I think that probably should have gone to the State Division of Human Rights.
Well, I made an amendment to lower this $2,500. I mean, unless there's a substantial change in the damage fee, I probably can't, support this. So does anybody have a compromise number?
I can support 10 or 15,000. That 10 to 15,000 is my range. I think that, look, I'll support it as it is, because I'm really proud of what came out of the the task force. But I think that 10 to 15,000 provides somebody with the damages for the local option that are appropriate, and I think that anything above $15,000 should go to the State Division, really.
Jonathan, can you support 12.5?
We talked about this issue a lot during, this was probably the last thing we dealt with. I mean, we were meeting months and months at 7 something in the morning, and this number was strongly spoken about, and just, out of respect, for that process and for the members of the task force and those from the different communities that put in all that time, and especially on this specific number, I'm staying at 25.
Fair enough. Anybody else want to weigh in on the fees? The damage, I should say. Jenny, what do you think?
I mean, I'll support the public hearing at 25.
I'll let it go then. All in favor as is?
Aye.
They turned the heat up after 7.
I think the air conditioning turned off when the power went all screwed.
I think if you want to contact the people that worked on it,
yeah,
and ask them if they would consider such a lower one.
I was very honest in the task force that it was going to be a sticking point in my caucus, I thought.
15 is probably good. It's deep enough where it's going to hurt somebody.
I mean, small claims, not to use small claims court because it's a really bad analogy, but it's
15,
the best.
I think below going below 15.
And I'm fine with that. But like the limit on small claims court in town court's $5,000 and city court is $10,000.
Right.
I would be willing to. I think $15,000 is reasonable, but 15. Let's discuss it amongst our caucuses and have the public hearing, and we can change it.
Can I have a point? Yeah. Actually, in landlord-tenant matters, there is no limit to entry of judgment.
So that's money that's owed in the most part.
Well, you're kicking someone out of their house. Right?
Well, you evicted them from your premises.
Sure. Right.
I guess that's the defense. That's the defense attorney in you.
Yes.
Just to counter that, what does make sense is that the minimum jurisdiction in the Supreme Court is $20,000, right, Chris? So if you come in with a claim under $20,000, you get remanded. So maybe 15 is a nice point between the 10 and city court, 20 and Supreme Court. It's kind of a middle ground.
Yeah, it's a hard number, too.
That might work. I mean, you know, I would support it at 15. I wouldn't want to see it going below that.
I tend to agree.
19,999.
We're going with
Joe O'Connor.
20,000.
Chris is going to start applying to be the administrative hearing officer.
That's right.
You get 10%.
Yeah. I get 10% for all entries. Yeah.
10% of all damages?
Exactly.
You know, he knows how to divide by 3.
That's exactly
I was going
right.
to say.
Anything different, I'm well, 25.
Throws them off.
We're going to go 257, set in a public. Setting a public hearing on proposed local law number 18, amending the Ulster County Charter, Administrative Code. Who's going to appoint the Board of Ethics members? Did that get smaller? Okay.
I'll move it for discussion.
Second.
Dave.
All right, Wes. Actually, I misspoke before because for some reason I thought we actually put something in a charter change to make it where people were appointed for a term as
they
opposed
are.
To. Oh, did we put that in
yes.
a charter change?
It's yeah. the charter right now. They served no period of years.
I was told the other night, though, that we never put it in a charter, but I knew that it was something I sponsored and it didn't get in
that
the
was
charter.
You and I working together when the charter change was going on
right.
in this committee with Kevin. Yeah.
Right, so we change it so they do serve at set terms.
Yes, they're appointed by
right.
the county executive to a term of years
right.
Approved by the county legislature.
All right, so anyway, what this was is this came out of a situation that we were at a really at a committee for legislative programs committee when we were appointing members to the community action board that actually had to be appointed by federal makeup requires by federal law members of a legislative body to serve on the community action, and it was brought up by the deputy county executive that it was a conflict of interest and we couldn't serve on it. That created a, you know, a situation where he had to get involved, he got involved, and we had to try and find out if it was legal and all this stuff, and then we got, you know, hearing back from the state saying it could be done, and, you know, and it is common practice and for nonpartisan, you know, not-for-profits to have people like this on those boards. So then what, at first they were saying, well, let's go to the Ethics Commission, you know, the Ethics Board. The problem with it was that we were advised by it at the one of the attorneys, the problem with that is you're going before a board that every member is appointed by the county executive. So it created a situation where I don't know if we, I still believe we would have gotten a fair airing. But having said that, it made me and made me think about this. This was something that actually Joe and I talked to, and we come up with this. And this, what it does is you just merely, the same thing you do now, the commission, the Board of Ethics is still appointed and, the members are approved by the legislative body, but the difference is each county wide elected official appoints one member, and it's staggered, so they have that on there. And I would actually like to also add a little bit on that, in that I think you might want to even add that no, there can be no more than two members from any registered in any one party. That was brought up by Tracy Bartels brought that up. But we don't have to have that, Lucy. It's not a bad idea.
I'm sorry, Jonathan.
I just have a question about the possible amendment you're proposing. So just be restricted based on the two major parties as represented in the
DOE? No, it would be any of them.
Because then it just, I mean...
But I mean, I don't need to put that in.
I just feel like that could be a can of worms.
It's in our current ethics law. So it says no more than two members may be of the same political party. So that could be independents, working families, not enrolled in any party, you know. Republican,
you could have five people not enrolled in any party.
Right, but no more than two
Republicans or two no more than two conservatives or two independents.
So a nefarious executive, the way it is right now, so a nefarious executive couldn't pack it with a bunch of people that are his political party to wage war on the other political party.
Nowadays, the way the common structure works, it's easy. I mean, you could just do if the guy was progressive, they would do one Democrat and one working families, then work at that way. Otherwise, Republican conservative. I mean, I just don't know if it really
matters.
It may not when it's done this way, but
if it's in the current charter and it's not being changed by this, then doesn't it stay in and doesn't need an amendment?
It was redacted in this draft. It was taken out.
That must be number three.
Yes.
It's deleted. You'll notice number three says deleted.
Proposed to be deleted.
Yes, that one could be added back in.
Jenny?
Thanks. Have we had any correspondence from the comptroller, the district attorney, the sheriff, or the county clerk that they're even interested in having this authority?
I talked to the clerk, and she she was interested, but she didn't say anything. I talked to the sheriff. He liked the idea. He supported it. Controller supported it. And then we had a call into the DA, but we just talked to the secretary, and I don't see him having a problem with it either. I mean, what would be the problem? Disappointing a member to the ethics board?
I just feel like before we expand their powers, we should have a chat with them. That's my only thought.
Timing is of the essence if we want to get this on a
I don't have a problem sending it to a public hearing. I don't know what I don't get it, but who am I?
Well, instead of every one of the ethics members of the ethics board being appointed by one person, you have five countywide people, and we have five members on the ethics board.
It
makes sense.
It's how many times we say, if it's not broken, why fix it?
Is it not broken?
I've never heard anybody complain about the board of ethics.
Like I pointed out, it's
partly our fault because we have the authority. Right. We have the authority to confirm these people.
The point is that we didn't want to go before them. Instead, we had an appeal to the state. So I'm saying it is broken. Not necessarily totally broken. I'm not saying it's like a disaster. But, why not?
Have met in the last year?
A lot.
Have they?
Yeah, to me, change things because that's good government. It's making changes. I think there's maybe one other county that does this.
There's two other counties, actually. Similar, not exactly the same.
No. I don't think there's any that have this set up. Suffolk County has what, two from the executive and then three from the legislature, the presiding officer, the majority leader, and minority leader.
And then they're all
confirmed by the legislature.
Correct. Chairman of Laws and Rules gets an appointment.
Yeah. And what's the other one?
Isn't that Suffolk?
Yeah. That one is Suffolk. What's the other one you said? There was another one?
Chris? Yes, there is. Nassau? Nassau, yes.
All right.
I printed it out somewhere.
Long Island.
If I could interrupt everybody, I think our attorney had his hand up.
Yeah, no, I had just one additional observation, which I think as proposed, there's a suggested addition of responsibility to legislative counsel, not that I would...
That's a good point.
Chris would like to shirk that duty, but my observation on that is...
It doesn't say minority counsel.
Your responsibility, isn't it?
Mazel tov.
Rather mine or Chris, potentially. The state enabling statute refers to the county attorney or independent counsel, and my personal observation on it is that I think the commission would be best served by the legislature authorizing hiring of an independent counsel to advise them. So it's not the county attorney and it's not the legislative counsel. Each of us has our own respective constituencies. So it's authorized by the state law. It's just an observation. I think would probably be better use of legal counsel for the service.
Absolutely.
What do you have about that? What he said?
I have no objection to that. I feel like that's a.
But then that would be an added cost.
Well, it could be. I just think what you're going to run into would be conflicts of interest. So anytime a legislator has a question before the commission, we certainly can't provide advice on that. It would be a conflict if you're advising the board that's judging the legislator's request for an advisory opinion.
But then just like with having like the conflict offender and other things in between, then at that point you just set up a system where at that point anything involving the legislator at that point you would just be, I don't know, either have the county attorney or have somebody else.
Well,
at that
I think that circles back to maybe the concern, which is that the county attorney is look, let's face it, is appointed by the executive.
Right.
The legislature. So
the his point is rather than transfer the authority to legislative counsel from the county attorney, then we specifically say that it's going to be outside counsel.
Opinion from both. In other words,
the
board authorizes. In other words, the resolution would authorize both to render an opinion.
I think that the point is that they're both present potential conflicts of interest. So, if you want the board to be truly independent, why not allow them to be able to hire outside counsel?
But then you're spending that added money, and you already have these people on staff. And
how much is independence worth? I mean, that's
Well, I understand that point, but the point is rather than spending more money, you're actually getting two opinions. So you're getting two opinions from two different branches of government.
If that's the case, I think you would probably have to change the portion of the charter that outlines the authority of legislative counsel to include this as well, because our duties, if you will, are specifically charged by the charter to provide advice to the legislature, serve the pleasure of the chairman. So, just a couple different moving parts. Maybe it's more policy or pragmatism than anything else, but I can certainly see any time a legislator comes in front of the Board of Ethics, we're not going to be able to get involved.
Yeah. Right.
And so...
Well, it would be the same thing if the county executive had to be brought before the...
I could just see it happening maybe more often. But you're right. But that's why state law allows that. I just didn't see this providing for use of an independent counsel, which I thought it should.
Point of clarification, I thought that it did in the new number 5.
Yeah, those are new.
It was previously 6. The last sentence: if the county attorney or attorneys for the county and/or legislative counsel has potential conflict of interest, the county shall make funds available for outside counsel.
If you're going to add to the duties of the legislative counsel, you have to change another portion of the charter. I personally think that legislative counsel should not be involved in giving ethics opinions, but that's my observation. It doesn't fit within our existing charge, if you will. So.
Nick, if you have changing the powers of the attorney in the charter, can it be written in this law?
It's a separate section.
Just be changing separate sections.
Yes, but it would have to be referred to that specifically.
So you don't need 2 questions on that charter or on a ballot?
No.
It's encompassed in the initial law.
Yeah.
So it seems like if you're going to follow this route and take the advice of counsel, you need to make an amendment?
Yep. What would that amendment be?
I think I'd have to take a look at just the enabling provision of the charter that outlines the responsibilities, duties, and obligations of legislative counsel and add to it those duties and responsibilities that are being bestowed on it in this legislation.
You want to write that up? We'll have a vote on this tomorrow night before our session. Jenny?
Dave, one of the ways that I feel like I could support something like this would be, a model more close to Suffolk, which would be to have the legislature and the executive making the appointments and not the executive and the countywide officials making the appointments. I feel like too many cooks are in the kitchen at that point, and I also don't know how I feel about the district attorney, the chief law enforcement officer in the county, and the sheriff, the other chief law enforcement officer in the county, appointing individuals to an ethics board. I don't know how I feel about that. I understand the reasoning behind it, but I feel like the appointments of... I don't think that they make any other appointments to boards such as this.
I think this would be set precedent.
I also don't know that we can add duties to them necessarily because they're all constitutional officers, the clerk, the DA, and the sheriff. I don't know how that jives with the state constitution.
Playing it out, and this is maybe something that you guys will know right off the bat, but playing it out, if someone brings an ethics complaint, does it ultimately progress to the point where the DA or a special prosecutor would be handling it if it was found? Is there a possibility that could...
That's a good point. I didn't think about that. Yeah, probably.
Could
refer it to the DA.
Could send it to a DA.
Right, so now if you had, but it'd have to be like the Dutchess County DA. It couldn't be the Ulster County DA.
Because he'd be conflicted out. That's what
I'm going to say. We have that now.
No, he wouldn't be. I wouldn't be conflicted out. Just because he appointed somebody to an ethics board.
Yeah, how can one of his appointments...
Back in the same boat again.
No, that's a, that's like really...
Push the budget together.
That's like really picking it apart, because that's not going to happen. The point that if the appointee from the DA and the entire board turns around and says that there's a problem, this thing has to be referred over to the DA's office. This is an appointee that was actually approved by the legislature. Understand that every one of them is still approved by the legislative body. So they are
not lost on me. I don't know how I feel. I don't know how I feel.
As a result, there is not. It's a conflict of interest. And then it would be a conflict of interest. I mean, you could really spread that conflict of interest to anybody and anything. It seems like at that point. I mean, it's a member of the board, and everyone that serves on that, it serves at a term that we set.
Chris,
all they're doing is putting the names forward.
That's all right. You're going to call the question.
I wasn't going to call it yet. Everybody's still seems a lot of interest in it.
The difference between a criminal prosecution, obviously, and the findings of a board of ethics are quite substantial. A person's conduct isn't excused in the context of a criminal court, even if they are found to not have violated any ethical provisions. It's a totally separate analysis, so I don't know if they would really correlate easily together.
You don't think that the determination of an ethics board... I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah,
I didn't wait for you to recognize me. You don't think that there's the potential for a complaint to be brought to the ethics board to rise to the level of official misconduct, which is a misdemeanor?
Oh, I think it could, but I don't think it necessarily has to. It's not a one for one analysis.
No, but there's a reasonable chance that could happen.
I guess there's a chance. There's a chance.
And with that chance, I'm
but with that chance, is that we is there supposed to be some kind of conflict there?
I think that there is a conflict if the district attorney appointed one of the members of the board that's then referring a case to the district attorney alleging official misconduct. I think the DA would then be conflicted out, and we would end up needing to go to a special prosecutor or another DA.
He's appointed. He's appointed and confirmed by the legislative body.
That is not
a conflict, because they voted with the other four people to send this thing to the DA's office.
We should
refer
that.
And it would not necessarily be really sent to the DA's office. If it is a misdemeanor or more than that, for matter, the DA is required to go after it. It's not because one member of the board was part of it.
The whole reasoning that you laid out for why yourself and Legislator Maloney had sponsored this was because of a concern of potential conflicts of interest of people appointed by the county executive, and now you're poo-pooing conflicts
because
of interest.
Every one of them are appointed by the county executive. It's not a matter of one. It's not like the DA is appointing all five members. He's appointing one member.
I'm going to go with Kathy, because you two are beating this pretty good.
Yeah, I agree with Chairman Ronk's recommendation. I think that people who are serving on an ethics board should be nominated by elected officials. And I do think there is potential for a conflict that would perhaps not rise...
Every one of them are elected officials.
Well, you did say elected officials, but I think
I'm sorry,
we know
representative
what you're
elected
I think
officials.
You know what you're
these officials, the sheriff, the district attorney, the comptroller, are elected to do specific jobs that have specialized training that is directed in that area, and they're not elected to be representative of the whole county or community in the way that individual legislators are and the county executive is. So, I think there is a potential for this conflict of interest to be perceived that the law enforcement agencies put people on and then are somehow charged to deal with these. So, I think the idea of making the nomination process broader and including the legislature makes sense.
Hector,
you open it. Okay, so, sorry, but it's just, you know,
just go to the stuff.
I'm not here to go and contradict it, but you know, anyone can be elected sheriff. You don't actually have to be a sworn officer. You probably should be, but you don't have to be in order to be sheriff. Yet for comptroller, you don't need specialized training to go and basically be elected to the position of comptroller. The only position that actually requires any kind of specialization is, in fact, district attorney or judge. Sorry, but
Fair enough. I'm just saying it's not elected to handle a specialized task.
I'm not even shilling for this version, but I'm just saying it's just that, like, let's also just be clear about this.
I can support it that way.
Accept the friendly amendment.
Because it is representative.
All right. And you know what? I, as the sponsor of this, and I have, you know, full authority to change it, I will.
I have no problem. Were you jacket and tie?
Oh, really?
Can we take it for you?
Yeah, could you?
Yeah, I'll keep it for you.
I'll operate that. Yeah.
You don't have to.
You go ahead.
I'll come out with you.
Ken, your wallet's... Ken, sorry, your back pocket. Just check your back pocket.
Yeah. Oh, I don't have a wallet there.
I can check it for you.
Oh, no, it just looked like it was falling out. So.
Yeah, where's my badge?
I still want to say my take on it is...
I was going to say it.
I think Dave's going to make an amendment so we can wrap this up.
All right. I'd amended to read as the Suffolk County Charter reads.
Section A.
Where the Section A reads as the Board of Ethics. Well, let me put it back in the video. Yes, establishing the Board of Ethics. Board of five members prior to shall be appointed by the. And then that would change.
And my car threw the serpentine belt slide to get off at Ravina before it died.
The county executive. Okay, so instead it would read, the first one would be two members will be appointed by the county executive. And you would change that the terms being December 31st, 2018, that's the same. And 2031st, 2019.
We should maybe alternate those.
And then, you know, to make sure it's an alternate movement on it. Term on December 31st, 2020 would be done by the presiding officer or the
chairman of the legislature.
Yeah, presiding officer or the chairman of the legislature. And then on December 31st, 2021, one would be done by the majority.
Leader.
And then the following would be by the minority leader. Any other changes you want, Hector?
Can I get two?
No, I'm joking.
Go ahead, Chris. Sorry.
And Hector gets two.
Can I just make a quick suggestion? Instead of having the two appointments... from the executive back to back, maybe one from
right,
the executive,
right.
one from the five. Chairman, and then whatever alternating sequence you want.
Well, it would be the executive, the chairman, and then the next one would be
the chairman.
No, it would be the executive first, chairman second, the majority leader third. The minority leader fourth, and then let me change that. I'm sorry. The executive, chairman, executive, majority leader, minority leader.
Given that majority and majority can switch depending upon years, it might be good to borrow some of the language from the proposed campaign finance law, which deals with balancing, or yep. from wherever it was good language to balance those.
Do you have that readily available? Do you remember what it said? I know what you mean. That's what I was thinking about.
Oh, it's going to get complicated in a hurry.
Dave, just check your numbers to see if the majority and minority leader are going to make the same appointments in the same term.
No, they would do it one, and then the following would happen.
Yeah, but yes, it would be in the same term.
It would be in the same, no.
It could be if we line it up right.
Yes, it could be.
Yeah, so if you did 20, like, for example, in, you know, we stand for election in 2019, the term runs from 2020 to 2021. Therefore, you would probably want the majority and minority leader to basically have their appointment be in 20 and 21, because you actually serve for calendar year 2020 right. and calendar year 2021. That's what you would want to do. Right. That's the solution, so that way you don't have to worry about, you don't have to worry about it's alternating majority.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Sorry. Any other questions? Because I'm going to call this. On the amendment.
Hold on, wait. Jay's still trying to figure out the amendment.
Jay can figure it out later.
It'd be the executive, right? And then...
Followed by the chairman.
Followed
by majority leader. Followed by minority leader.
Followed
then,
by...
And then the appointment in 2022 would be county executive. So the executive would have the first one and the last one based off of this list.
And then, but he would... So he would still get two in a row, but it's not a big deal.
Okay.
I mean, because you're still serving.
Too, but so long as the majority and minority are then at that point...
Yeah, that solves that problem, yes.
That's perfect.
That solves that problem.
Do you make that amendment, Dave?
I'll make it.
I need a second on the amendment.
Second.
All in favor of the amendment?
Aye.
Aye.
All in favor of the resolution?
Aye.
Aye.
Very good.
Thank you.
We got one more. Or you want to leave? You leave. Go ahead. Nicholas. Take care. Thank you.
Night court.
Thank you.
Kevin, you'll kind of know what you're doing with that iPad. Yes, we're gonna go to 275. Amending the rules of order to permit memorializing resolutions.
I'm moving.
Second.
Discussion? Kenny?
I believe I've spoken with legislative counsel about this in the past, and aside from the fact that I don't support this as written, it might not be best to just delete the entire section of memorializing resolutions, but to come up with a better one that doesn't prohibit them, if that's your will. But that having been said, I mean, this just eliminates all mention of memorializing resolutions in the rules.
Right, which means you can add them.
Yeah, no, my observation, if I can interject, is just, to me, it would be accomplishing your goal just as well to strike shall be prohibited. To leave the definition of memorializing resolutions, because the issue does come up from time to time. And we look to the rules to define what one is or is not. And that's how it was beforehand. I think all legislative parodies was to add shall be prohibited. And so you're essentially rolling back the clock if you then strike out shall be prohibited. But that's semantics.
Well, I'm thinking about it. Do anybody else have any thoughts on this?
I've not on this not on this individual issue, so I'll hold my comments until everyone else is done with this issue.
Kathy, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah. No, it's all right. I just it's almost as though the council is proposing it be retained as a definition, but it's not really a definition as written. So I think that it just restores the status quo before this language was introduced. So it's very simple.
Yeah, my understanding of the history is that was, in fact, present in the rules beforehand. So in other words, if you wanted to determine what a memorializing resolution was, you look at the rules and you could say, however it says, any rule that does not request legislative authority from a body, what have you. And from time to time, we would have to determine is this question memorializing or not. We could refer to the rules. So if you strike it out wholesale...
If that's your proposal, I think it should be to reinstate that definitional language, because just striking shall be prohibited does not include what you just said the definition was.
Well,
but
and the whole thing is struck now.
Right.
I think that his point is unstrike everything except for shall be prohibited.
Correct.
I understand that.
Yeah.
But what's left does not provide a definition. Doesn't even have a complete sentence. Not.
Hector, go ahead.
I through the chair, Mr. Rock. I mean, Ken, I'm trying to remember back in when the most substantive rule change happened, it would have been in 2012.
Sometime around then.
Because I don't remember there being a definition for memorializing resolutions before that point. I don't think we actually had a definition for a memorializing resolution. We just did them.
I don't think so.
It was so long ago.
Yeah, no, but you get what I'm saying.
I do.
So by removing it, yes, while I get that the intent behind the 2012 rules change, which was, I think, to kind of formalize it, before 2012, we didn't have a definition for it, and we just did them, like we did any other resolution.
Okay.
So, but I also get the point of, yes, you could read so through the old language if
we'll
you want.
Leave it alone. I mean, I'm you know...
Tired?
It's, no, it's really, you know, it's six, one, half, a dozen, the other. I just, you know, I make a quick comment. Kevin, your phone's flashing.
Sorry.
Okay. You know, I'll make a quick comment that it's just absolutely astonishing to me that there has been no room for compromise at all from the Democratic caucus on this. You know, with that having, you know, it's astonishing and saddening that there's been no room for compromise at all. With that said, I make a motion to postpone it, hoping that compromise appears at some point. Postpone it for a month.
Do we have a second on the postponement?
Second.
On the postponement.
On the postponement or not?
I'd like to know. I'd like to speak on the postponement.
Go ahead.
Well, I don't think we need to have a postponement. I mean, there has been no compromise offered from the Republican caucus.
Holy crap, I disagree with that. Sorry.
Compromise is doesn't mean that you're turning into saying, oh, well, we don't want this, and you have to have this, and that's not compromise. Compromise is having a discussion on it and saying, let's come up with something in the center that we want to look towards. That's what compromise is.
I'm aware of what compromise is.
Offered was not compromise.
But then I said, let's come to an agreement. Let's find some way where we're not bringing them back, you know, completely unchecked. You know, I suggested several different incarnations, including one of which was that it had to have the same number of sponsors as a petition to discharge requires. Only one would have to be from the other side. That way, one party couldn't just try and, you know, a vast minority of the body of eight people couldn't just bring something up for politics without a member of the other political party or another political party to do it as well. I remember bringing up several suggestions and then opening the floor and saying, does anybody have any better suggestions? So to say that I came with something and said it has to be this or nothing, I think is blatantly false and will be backed up by the recordings that are kept online.
Yeah, let's hold down the rhetoric so we can finish this up tonight and come up with hopefully a compromise, Dave, because I do remember the first time we talked about it, there was all kinds of ideas floating around that everybody seemed to be receptive about. Does anybody... I'm looking at one Democrat that, you know, I thought he could compromise. And Jonathan, go ahead.
No, I was just, you know, to defense of Dave, I mean, I remember when there was the repealer for memorializing resolutions. I don't remember any attempt to compromise.
I don't think there was anything brought up to compromise, but I could be wrong.
Also, I remember it used as an opportunity, you know, it was rather being compromised. It was done because the caucus with the majority of votes wanted it done, and you did it. And then even, I mean...
There was votes on both sides of the aisle for that there, Skippy.
Okay.
Both sides of the aisle.
Did you call him Skippy?
Yeah, number one is that's come on, dude.
I apologize. Yeah, that wasn't meant as it wasn't meant as derogatory.
Obviously, the memorializing resolutions gets the chairman upset. I don't know why it's that big of an issue.
Because once again, you're trying to use party, but you're trying to specifically use party politics when it wasn't party politics to talk about how we did it because we wanted to, the majority party wanted to. It passed with votes from both caucuses.
Again, Kenny, I'd like to keep this...
But I'm just saying, I don't think it's fair to criticize the legislators because they support their own version.
Well,
and
we got
to listen to every suggestion or...
Any suggestion.
All right.
Jonathan,
I'll wait.
I'm going to just say, we got a motion to postpone. I believe we got a second. I'm going to offer a compromise right here because I know where this is going to go if I allow the postponement. If we could set up a subcommittee and you guys work it out, and I will support whatever comes out of that. David, Jim?
Sure.
Are you willing?
I'm willing to do. I'd work with anybody, even Jim.
Nothing like starting off with the right foot, David. I would expect no less.
Even Jim.
Jay, if you could work with them to set up a meeting in the future. Jim, I'm going to make you chairman of that little subcommittee, so, and anybody is welcome to attend.
Can I be the deputy chair?
No, you're going to chair that.
Oh, I thought you said Dave was.
No, fine. Dave got the campaign finance chair.
Is it just you and me, or who else?
Huh?
That's enough for me.
Well, for right now, let's just let it. No, no, no.
All right.
I want to dump it afterwards.
Thank you, Hector.
But I mean, this resolution I still have out, and it's I guess it's being postponed. I'm not pulling it. I want the clock ticking on this. No.
I
expect a compromise in front of us next.
But
month.
That's fair. That's fair. Because if he's doing it,
if you guys
if he's doing
do it
against, you know.
But it's going to be tough for me to create. I mean, my. The caucus wants these back.
As I said, unwilling to explore compromise. That's
the compromises we want them back.
Well, then, Dave, then vote no on the postponement.
It's not a compromise.
I am voting no on the postponement.
What about the subcommittee?
You're the one that creates the subcommittee.
If you're not going to participate willingly.
Oh, I'll participate willingly, but I mean, if I hear something.
You can talk to your caucus tomorrow, and then...
In other words, interesting. I mean, I believe there could be something there that could be fixed this to make it a little more palatable for those that don't like it. Okay. But having said that, it can't be this major change. I don't agree with the idea that just it has to be somebody from the other party offering one, because sometimes things have to be said. People want to make their voices heard. Or their local representatives where they want to hear it.
Hector.
Thank you. I'm going to echo, let's say Donaldson, but I'm also going to go and say to Alderman Bertier, of course, I mean, I'm going to bring it up in caucus, but more importantly, I'm going to urge participation by the caucus in trying to go and work via the subcommittee. All right? So that at least I think we can promise. All right?
Thank you.
All right.
So we don't need a vote on postponement.
Well, you need a vote.
Yeah, it's vote. You still have to vote.
Postponement. All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Okay.
Aye.
There you go.
No.
No.
Aye.
And that is our business tonight.
Motion to adjourn.
All in favor?
Aye. Aye. Aye.